Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase.
You've seen it. If you really know your wife, if you really know your husband, there was one that said, how well do you know your husband? What's his handicap? So I sent it to my wife, and her answer was 4. Wow. That's what I said.
Jeremy White.
But here's the thing. I ended up with a win either way. She guessed I'm a 4. I am not a 4. But she said, I Googled what's a good golfer's handicap, which means she thinks I'm a good golfer. So I'll take that win.
And Joe DiBiase.
But now she knows that she's wrong.
Well, she doesn't have
from
the
right. From her Google search standard, you now have to tell her that I am actually indeed not a good golfer.
I'm not a 4.
She knew what the range of numbers is in the first place, like what it means. Like she would know a low number is better than a high number for this.
That's a good question. She just Googled what's a good golfer's handicap, and then
she said that's got to be the number.
4.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on Western New York Sports Giant, WGR Sports Radio 550.
I feel like your wife will have more respect for your golf game being as good as you are with a member guest title.
Now I'm a champion.
Than if you were a 4 handicap without a member guest title.
That might be right. There is a trophy sitting on the mantle.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, that's right.
Mantle, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mantle real estate?
I moved it. I moved it to the mantle.
Wow.
Yeah, what can I say? Only thing that has to happen here, they emblazon our names on the plaque on the wall.
Uh-huh.
It's a big step. Good morning, it's Jeremy and Joe. I saw one of the viral highlights on Twitter yesterday. Is a guy that hit a 115-foot putt to win a member guest.
Wow.
So, yeah, anyway. Anyway, so much member guest talk.
115 feet. How many courses even have a 115-foot putt?
Well, I think he might have, Texas wedge off the green kind of scenario.
Oh, okay.
Either way, he putted. Yeah, he's off the green. He's all putting right from off the green. And he made it in front of all the members. Like, you know, those moments are pretty cool.
Yep.
All right, Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Sal's off today. We're giving him a day off. He deserves, he's still on the Extra Point Show. But we're giving him the morning off, right? No training camp today.
Yeah.
It is the debut of Hard Knocks tonight.
Yes, it is. 9 o'clock, right?
Very exciting. We're going to get some good stuff.
Yep. Has it always been on a Tuesday?
I
thought I remembered it being like a Sunday night. But
I don't.
I'm just thinking of any HBO show that's appointment television usually being Sunday night and maybe Hard Knocks has not been that.
Yeah, the Sunday night list, that Game of Thrones was Sundays, Sopranos was Sundays.
I think Succession was Sundays.
Was Boardwalk Empire Sundays?
That sounds right.
It seems to be the go-to move. So tonight, Hard Knocks gets started. Tomorrow, the Hard Knocks post-game show. We might have some stuff to talk about as a result, which will be pretty cool.
Yeah, but I don't know the exact, how many days back do we think tonight's going to end at? A week?
It's a good question.
Like the first 2 weeks of training camp?
I bet, if you want to talk about just on James Cook's front, I bet it is addressed that the star running back is seeking a contract extension, but he is here at camp, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And then maybe the next episode, it's, no, he's not.
No, you know what it's going to be? It's going, I wonder, if I were doing that show, what would I do? I would, because if you do it at the beginning, hey, James Cook is here, training, you make that a storyline, him being there, everyone watching is going to know, this is outdated. We all know this didn't hold up. He's not here now, but in the show, I bet they save that part of it till the end, him showing up day one of camp, and then that's how it ends, and then there's the teaser for next week, which is coming up next week on Hard Knocks, and it's Cook not being there.
That might be right.
That's what you're going to get.
And our conversation with lead director, if I have the title right, Pat Harris, he basically said they film it all, and then they send it all back, and it's put together there. So, he's right in charge of filming and all that, and we'll see. How quickly can they turn something around and say, oh, no, this has to go on the end. Here's the last 5 minutes. It's going to be right here.
Right.
So that'll be good. That'll be good. It's tonight, Hard Knocks on HBO, 9 o'clock this evening. There's a premiere party and everything. Good times. Carrington Harrison joins us at 9. He talks Chiefs, so we'll check in with the Kansas City Chiefs and their offseason, how that's going. So Carrington Harrison joins us at 9. And between now and then, we are wide open for you to call in and shout about James Cook if you want to shout about James Cook or, chat about it with us. Either way. Because, I guess it's worth watching. No practice today.
Nope.
So we won't necessarily get day 3 of the situation.
Nope.
But
Day assume he won't play. Right? He won't play in the preseason game, I'd assume.
I would assume that too. Wednesday and then Thursday of camp, and then back to Buffalo for the preseason, and off we go to the regular season as the Bills pursue the Super Bowl again. It's one of the things about this situation. Am I alone in thinking that? I tried to start to lay this out yesterday, and I'll try again here. Am I the only one that thinks all of the macro team building, how to build your franchise is good and great, and I support all that, the idea about what where you should draft. But when you get to where the Bills are, you have to start breaking some rules to try to win it. That's where, you know, a team that's drafting third overall, don't take a receiver. You need a quarterback. Oh, right, right. That's right. You need a quarterback. Or don't take a guard. You need this. Or I don't know. I'm trying to think of all the things we talk about to build a franchise and what's important. It's quarterback and tackle. Remember Doug Whaley's five positions? Quarterback, left tackle, defensive end, wide receiver, and cornerback. Like, he had his five positions. These are the most important. And where the Bills are now, it's just a little different. It's, yeah, you know what? Maybe you should try to sign Odell Beckham Jr., even though we might not think it's the best idea. Let's talk about it. Anything to get over the finish line, and the Rams are a story for that, right? They traded for Von Miller. They traded for Beckham. They made the swing of getting rid of Goff for Stafford because that. How many other teams would ever trade their quarterback? It's only when you get to that purgatory of we are here, and it's time to break a couple rules to do what it takes to get over the line. And it's not always going to work. You know, the Rams might be lucky to have done that. And I kind of end up feeling like that with Cook because anytime anybody's going to say, guys, if James Cook's not on the team and it's Ray Davis carrying the ball, I think they're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Find me a thing on the team that that's not true of other than Josh Allen getting hurt. You and I kind of did this exercise.
Mm-hmm.
How many games they win if Dawkins is out for the year? Would you say like 13?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that he's unimportant. How many games would they win if they gave up 29 points per game on defense? How many games would they win? 13?
Yeah.
12?
At least 10.
You'd hope.
At least 10.
That doesn't mean giving up 29 points per game is something you want to do. It's just we are very much in this life where we are expecting double-digit wins, and we're only evaluating them on the playoffs. And that kind of gets to, it almost feels like to me, Joe, I'm bringing my wide receiver point that we talked about with Brandon Bean two interviews ago, which is, he says, you know, the receivers aren't the reason we lost. And that's not wrong. 29 points they scored. But I'm thinking about, but on 4th and 5, or 3rd and 10, or the previous drive, or 6 different 4th and 1 sneaks, I'm thinking, I know your team is great, but I'm really into 7 plays of an elimination game. And who's out there, and what's happening, and what am I doing? And for that, I'm on Cook where, man, you got a lot of people pretty confident that Ray Davis is the guy that's just going to be good enough in the most important spot when I just watched James Cook make game-changing plays for them in that game. And that's got me a little nervous. I'm not here telling you they won't be good without Cook, but I need every single edge available to me. And if there's a way to get it over the line with Cook, I've said the whole time, like, I do want him back. I do want him on this team because, you know, these are the margins. And I'm not even disputing they would win the division.
Right.
The offense would be fine because they tend to be fine with a lot of things.
The difference, though, for me would be that this is kind of part of the replaceability of running back, part of it, that I think that is definitely true. Like, the line on them for a game or for the division or the Super Bowl does not move with any injury that isn't Josh Allen. Right. Dawkins.
Shakir's high ankle sprain. Like, they'll be fine.
Nothing. But you have these positional groups that if you build injuries on top of one another, that can sink you.
Yes.
If I have two important offensive linemen that are injured. Like, okay, three. Now I start to see lines move. Now I start to see a shift. This is what happened to Kansas City in a Super Bowl, right? Like, they had not just one injury, they had multiple injuries
compounding
at the same group that compounded together, and they lost a Super Bowl because of it. Not just lost, they were uncompetitive in a Super Bowl because they just couldn't block Tampa Bay. And that's happened to the Bills, right? On defense.
Linebacker.
It's not just, if just Terrell Bernard or just Matt Milano had been out, then maybe you would have been fine to go up against Kansas City 2 years ago. But I had both of them out and Baylen Specter out and Tyrell Dodson out. Like, you just had all of these guys built on top of one another. And I just don't know that that would ever happen at running back. Because running back is the position more than ever, more than any, which is, if I run out of guys, I go call Gus Edwards off the street, and I still feel like I'm not as good, but I'm not in critical shape here. My offensive line, if Dawkins goes down, and then Brown goes down, and then McGovern goes down,
You're in trouble.
I'm pulling people off the street to play offensive line, I'm in big trouble. And I don't feel that way about running back.
Then how come two of the best teams and two of the biggest competitors, the Eagles and the Ravens, have decided that position is super important?
Because they got
the best guys.
They have. It is worth pointing out that those teams were also unbelievable with completely replacement-level running backs before
that. I agree. Miles Sanders put up really good numbers with the Eagles. They went to a Super Bowl with him. Right?
They did, and the Ravens with Gus Edwards. Dobbins was never healthy, so you can't even count him.
The Gus bus.
The Chiefs with Pacheco. Who's Pacheco?
He's
okay, but he's not as good as James Cook.
No, he's not, and he's kind of faded away, right? They drafted another guy here, Breshard Smith.
He had a down year because of he had an injury Injuries. Early last year. Actually, didn't he break his leg?
I think so.
Yeah. And then he came back from that.
He did it just running because he runs so angry that he broke his leg throwing it into the ground.
Yeah, but he's a guy.
He's a guy. Right. That's right. And I mean, the Chiefs did draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Right. They tried to go big
for right or wrong. I mean, they didn't exactly get that right. He was not very good, but they thought this is of value here.
And they won the Super Bowl with him.
I know.
And he wasn't that good.
But he wasn't that good.
And I know, like, you're right. Like, there are these other teams now that have done it, and they have gone in on it, and the Chiefs won the Super Bowl with Edwards-Helaire when the league wasn't running as much, right? And right now they are. But
it kind of, picking up on what you said,
yeah.
If the Bills lost all their linebackers and played street free agents like they did against the Chiefs, how many games would they win? 13? You might think 13. You might think 12. The point is, I'm getting at it with Cook, I don't really have an argument against the 17-game conversation. If I'm Bean, or the GM of this team, I'm thinking, you know, I'm not gonna ruin the franchise here. And he talks a lot about, you know, the cap for 26 and the cap for 27, which I think that's talk for the players to try and get them to accept less. No, we don't want to hamstring ourselves, right? Reality is they won't be hamstrung. They'll be fine. The cap is not prohibitive for this team, and it keeps going up, and the Eagles keep using void years and showing one way to do it, and the Bills have started to add some void years now. So, like, they're dabbling in that market where they're pushing more money in the future because taking a loan in the future is actually cheaper. Mm-hmm. I know, like, we always talk about it like it's a credit card bill you have to pay, but you are always paying it when you have more money. Imagine throwing some debt into next year, and you're like, yeah, but next year I'm actually getting a monstrous raise. Like, okay, great.
Right.
Sounds great.
Right. You know you're getting a raise every single year.
Yes.
Like a good, like a huge
like
one.
Like a 20% raise every year. Like, oh my God, what am I going to do with this $2 million dead cap figure? Like, you got more money to spend. And then again, everybody does. But, you know, Cook, I don't know where this ends. I don't know where this goes. I don't know if he kind of limps back to the Bills. It's such an interesting offseason for a lot of these players, for Terry McLaurin, for Micah Parsons, who is making this bold statement and stand against the Cowboys, but still reporting to practice and talking to teammates and talking to coaches, I guess because he has to, he doesn't want to get fined.
Yep.
I don't know what to do with Cook. I the Bills have said, and Brandon Bean said, they do want him here, that they have tried to get him signed.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's being unreasonable about it, I guess it just is what it is. But I don't think it's just as easy as, well, the next guy up. Ray Davis had a good game. Like, okay, great. A lot of guys have had a good game. Saquon Barkley. Jordan Mason had a couple good games with the Niners. Mm-hmm. And if Christian McCaffrey's healthy, they don't just, you know, kick McCaffrey to the curb. They think he's an unbelievable asset. And when healthy, he is. So, Ray Davis, I've got plenty of respect for Ray Davis. I've got plenty of respect for Ty Johnson. I don't think we should be looking at it as it's, oh, well, it's James Cook to Ray Davis. Really what it is it's James Cook to Darrington Evans. You're cycling everybody down one spot, and you as a team that uses your backs a lot, right? Mm-hmm. A lot. How many catches for running backs in this offense compared to other teams?
Oh, last year? Oh, weren't they the most?
Number one.
They were number one by percentage?
Maybe. We'll double check.
They were close to that.
They throw to their backs a lot. So if all of a sudden you take away the guy that's at the top of that pecking order, am I throwing it to Darrington Evans as much? I don't think so. Darrington Evans has been with the Bills a couple times, several times. He's been around the league, and he's not really caught on anywhere. And all of a sudden, he's going to be one of the three backs that is part of the number one running back-based passing game in the league. The Bills get away with what they do at receiver, in part because they treat their backs and tight ends, of course, as weapons and pass catchers. I mean, Evans has been with, like, his Wikipedia reads kind of funny. Titans, Bears, Colts, Bills, Dolphins, Bears, Bills.
And the Bears, they just keep going back.
The Bills. Three stints with the Bears and three stints with the Bills.
They just keep going back and forth.
He's just a guy that's catching on and finding his way in this league, and that's the guy that is now up one. All right, I'm not throwing the ball to him. I don't know if I'm throwing it to Ray Davis on the same level I am as with James Cook, who is much more elusive. Like, Ray Davis has downhill speed. Cook is elusive. If Davis gets those little dump-off passes that Cook gets, it's not the same. Ty Johnson, same, right? Really great straight-line speed. Cook is your guy that makes guys miss and has rush yards over expected, which the other guys do not really do on the same level. So I don't know what to do with it. I don't agree with they'll just be fine, because in the game they are going to need every single piece.
Yeah.
I got to have my best pieces.
But yet he's not going to be out there at the end?
Well, that's a criticism of them. He could be out there at the end.
It is, but they don't trust him because he has this hole in his game.
He could be out there. Well, I mean, lots of players have holes in their game.
That's right.
He could be out there in a two-back set at the end of the game, and they could throw it to him because they don't trust throwing it to Keon Coleman, not on the field at the end of the AFC Championship game. Does that mean he's a bust and worthless? He wasn't out there.
Right.
Right? They throw to Amari Cooper, who's not on a team right now. I actually fell for a fake Adam Schefter report that Cooper had retired. I thought, I guess it's possible.
that made sense.
Yeah. There was a fake Adam Schefter tweet. I'm like, oh, there it is. I guess he retired. So,
Why is he not out there? Because they're worried. They envision, you know, that's the final drive, and the season comes to an end on him getting destroyed by some linebacker, and then Allen getting sacked.
Half the reason,
Allen never gets sacked anyway.
The other reason he's not out there is because they're going to keep their back end to block, because the Chiefs are going to send a lot of pressure, and the Bills know no one can get open down the field, and the pass is going to be short to Shakir or Kincaid or Cooper. Like, what's he out there for? They could have put him out there to go somewhere in a pattern or do something. I mean, I don't want to get too deep in on that. Like, he's not on the field.
But you have another running back who running routes like that is as good as him.
And how did he do on that play? Was
Ty
he targeted?
Johnson, he wasn't. On fourth, on the last play?
Right. On fourth and five, there are a lot of guys out there. The play call is to throw it to Shakir behind the line of scrimmage.
Right.
So it's not like they're this perfect offense that decides, like, this is now our fatal flaw on late game situations. They are... I mean, they are a rotational team. They are in love with their rotations. And if you're going to be a team that is in love with your rotations, can I sit here and cherry pick and say, how come that guy's not out there? You love your rotations.
Yeah.
Von Miller rotated in endlessly, right? Rousseau, he actually played a lot more snaps last year. But Rousseau is going to rotate out sometimes. They do it on the defensive line. They do it at receiver. I'm not saying he's the perfect back.
Right.
If he wants to be paid like the perfect back, that's probably not going to happen.
But what I'm saying is, part of the discussion about what, you know, those biggest moments and in those biggest games, like, I might agree that I could just say the pass blocking be damned. He's your most dangerous back. He should be out there. But in reality, it feels like they wouldn't have him out there. So the discussion of they'll be fine, like, I already am going to probably face those biggest moments without him out there already. I already kind of don't have him because the team doesn't put him out there.
Conversely, some of these games you played in, there weren't big moments late because he ripped off a 65-yard touchdown run and killed it for you. And in that game, the only reason you're in the big play at the final drive is because he got in the end zone on 4th-and-1 for you.
Right.
So, you know, like...
It's a great play.
It's an unbelievable play.
It's a statuesque play.
It's an unbelievable play. He makes that play, and we're sitting here saying, like, well, he wasn't out on the next drive. True.
Yeah.
You know, like, you are not in that drive if he's not there. It's not that complicated, but it is... Interesting. We've got some clips to play a little bit later. Listening to Jerry Ostrowski. I talked to him yesterday as part of the Bill Squad show that I do with him and Joe Marino. And he said flat out that if James Cook's not on the team, the Bills' offensive line has to change the way that it blocks.
Because of Davis?
Because
of the differences between...
What they run when Cook is on the field, Ray Davis would not really succeed with on the same level. So now I'm taking my rushing attack. Think about how much... If you love what the Bills did on offense last year, running the ball, protecting the football, everybody eats, and they want to run it back. Mm-hmm. If they run it back minus James Cook, they run it back without that blocking scheme, kind of, because that blocking scheme suits Cook, and it doesn't suit Davis. They have to change their offense. Their continuity of what they do on offense is kind of disrupted by that. And, you know, Cook is at the center of all this, but... It's a bigger change than just next man up. It then becomes, all right, well, we're not running this same, you know, wide zone that we run for Cook because Ray Davis, he's not the patient guy that waits and picks a spot. He's going to run into the back of an offensive lineman, and it'll be 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Maybe. I shouldn't just guarantee that on Davis. I'm kind of paraphrasing what Jerry had to say. And Joe Marino agreed. They would have to change their blocking scheme.
Mm-hmm.
If they change their starting running back. So I don't think it's as easy.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday, a lot of what Brandon Bean had to say was worth noting and worth taking down. He did talk about how Cook gives them the opportunity to do more. He's back there, and defenses have to think about more potential outcomes than with the other guys.
By the way, one correction. I always forget this. One correction. Cook is out there on the final drive. He plays... I mean, he's on the two downs right before third and 10 and fourth and whatever. He's not on the field. So he's not on the field for the screen to Amari Cooper. Okay. And he's not on the field for the Kincaid play at the very end. And he's not out there for the first play. Ty Johnson gets a rushing attempt on the first play. That's kind of why it feels like
Ty Johnson.
He's not out there because Ty Johnson begun the drive and then ended it.
And how'd that play go?
And he lost 1 yard.
Not a great idea.
So then they had three plays. Second and 11. Allen gets the first down scrambling. Cook's out there for that. Allen goes to Shakir. Cook's out there for that. And then Cook is out there for 2nd and 10. And on the 2nd and 10, one of the Chiefs linebackers blitzes, and Cook whiffs on him. I don't think the play would have been any different. He throws it to Samuel. It's incomplete. So I don't think it made any effect on the play.
That's a throw.
Did the Bills maybe do there?
Is that the throw to Samuel where it's a little bit low, and if Allen gets more times, Samuel is running free for a long time?
Yeah, okay, I guess I could see that. I mean, okay. It gets batted. That's why I guess I thought maybe that the play wouldn't be different. But yeah, if Samuel gets it outside, he probably turns upfield and gets the first. I don't know if the pass gets there regardless. But either way, Cook kind of misses on the block, and maybe he was going to play that whole final drive.
Mm-hmm.
And did McDermott or the Bills running backs coach or whoever watch him miss that block and say, get him off the field?
Maybe.
They maybe were going to have him out there.
Does that
maybe it wasn't a. All I'm saying is it wasn't a pre-planned thing that he's not playing the final drive because we trust Ty Johnson more.
And was that the right call?
Maybe to take him off.
Maybe
I don't think Ty Johnson does and makes any impact in either of the next two plays. So it probably turns out the same way
and ends up being a screen and an orbit motion.
Yeah,
like, you know,
Johnson goes to block on the screen, but there's no. By the time he gets the block, the pass is already gone because it's a screen. And then Kincaid, he's running a route at receiver.
It's funny, we've gone from me saying, like, the zoom out point is one thing. I zoomed in on a game, and now we're zooming in on, like, three plays. But I don't think that's wrong to do. I think that's kind of how it should be. Because when you're three or four plays away, you're trying to find the answer on three or four plays.
I'm watching it from the back. Cook misses the block, and sure, Allen might have had an extra second if he picks it up. But this is just the guy McGovern's blocking jumps up and blocks it. That's it. That's going to be a completion to if this defensive tackle 5 yards away doesn't jump up and hit the ball, Samuel's going to catch the ball and get the first down.
Okay.
So I don't think Cook cost them on that play, but it did get him maybe taken off the field.
803-0550. Dan, if you can hang on, we'll get to your call. Have some time for you on the other side. Anybody else want to chat about this? I think it's juicy. There's good stuff on Cook. We'll talk about it with you. I'm also ready to entertain the Micah Parsons conversation and put all of you through a Let's Get Stupid thought experiment that might change your mind on the way certain things are framed. So we've got that coming for you as well. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Tuesday. It's cool outside. You can tell, like, summer is turning. It's not thick, hot in the morning.
Yeah.
Nice and breezy at 5 a.m. as opposed to, like, soupy. But it's going to be, like, in the 80s today, so that's cool. You give us a ring, 803-0550. We'll talk to you next here on WGR.
I think Cook is unique in his vision and his elusiveness, and that's captured in a stat. He was contacted behind the line of scrimmage at the second lowest rate of any back in football last year, behind only Jahmyr Gibbs. Ray Davis was 17th. And I think that's really important because not only is he a home run hitter, he helps keep this offense on time. Look, the Bills do not have a group of world beaters at receiver. They have an all-world quarterback, but they also have a dominant run game. And I don't like the idea of taking Cook out of this group because I thought he was exceptional last year, and you saw him really develop, particularly when it came to that vision.
Mina Kimes on James Cook tonight, the start of Hard Knocks. So get to a television, get a subscription if you need to, I guess. If you want to, maybe you'll see some clips otherwise, and we'll tell you what's happening. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Tuesday, August 5th, preseason week one. In 2 days, Bills play the Giants on Saturday.
And there's preseason on Thursday this week also.
Locked and loaded.
Yeah, Colts-Ravens. There's a couple games. Colts-Ravens, Bengals-Eagles.
Fantastic four-way parlay. We'll hit it. We'll have to.
On Thursday.
Yeah. On Cook, Dan in Ellicottville is up first. Hey, Dan, good morning.
Morning, guys. To reiterate, just basically back up whatever Mina Kimes just said, just look at this globally as weapons. As wide receivers, there's a weapon group, and running backs is a weapon group. I mean, we are now much different than 3-4 years ago with Diggs, a 50-50 run split team. We have arguably a top five running back room in the league, total room, and Cook is by any measure top 7 or 8 running back in the league. So we're going to pay, and I love Shakir, don't get me wrong. We're going to pay Shakir $15 million a year for 76 touches. Maybe he gets to 85 this year. That's great. He's vital to our offense. Our running back room last year had 418 touches, and they're not worth $15 million as a group together. I mean, I think Johnson's 2, Davis a little under 1. Give Cook 11 or 12, as you said, Jeremy, and 2 years, maybe next year, that's going to seem like nothing. Maybe it seems like 8 or 9. I'm running out of time here. I got 5 to 7 years left of my Bills fandom. I'll be like 70. And by that, I mean my fandom to potentially get into a Super Bowl unless somehow we get, hit the Andrew Luck sweepstakes or the Aaron Rodgers sweepstakes and get another great quarterback on the turn again after Josh is done. I don't get it. I understand Ray Davis is good. He's not James Cook by a lot of the things Mina Kimes just said. I mean, I rewatched a lot of highlights this week of last year's games, and he just not just the explosive plays around the corner. He had a couple of fastest timed runs in the league. I think one of them was in the Niners game in snow, but he had some runs in the hole. He had a couple. Kyle Brandt, angry runs.
Angry runs, one once.
He almost probably could have won it a second time. I just think we're this close to making and or winning a Super Bowl. I don't know why you would mess that. I just think Cook is the guy that puts you over the top, and I do not think going back to Ray Davis or Darrington Evans is going to – maybe it gets you 11 or 12 wins. It's not going to get you a Super Bowl. And, again, I understand he's got to play. He doesn't really have a choice, but I don't know why you would want a disgruntled guy for, again, $15 million for that total running back room as a weapon group that's going to get 400-plus touches. I just think it's a no-brainer that you have to do it. Thanks, guys. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, looking up fastest ball carriers. So Cook had these on the list. Yeah, he had the 7th fastest run last year.
Yeah.
The only players to have run faster than him, Kevontae Turpin, if you remember him.
The returner.
Dallas speedster.
Yeah.
Brian Thomas Jr., Jahmyr Gibbs, Saquon Barkley, Nico Collins. That's the end of the list. And Cook was the 7th fastest this past season. He came in at number 7, and then also on the list, like, you know, Derrick Henry got up there, and Jonathan Taylor. Barkley's all over this list. Barkley's got some, of course, breakaway speed. You know, it's the other thing about it is the context of it. We're kind of talking about the big picture versus the smaller picture, and the Bills are out here talking again this offseason about explosive plays. We got to get more explosive plays. Mm-hmm. He is your best explosive play right now. He was it. Last year, he, let me double check, I think led the league in 40-plus yard runs.
Yep.
Tied with Jonathan Taylor maybe in that department. So he broke long ones. He was a big play waiting to happen. And I'm glad you brought up the kind of team that they are now. For a team, this could be an argument, if I wanted to push it this way, I could. Since they're much more of a 50-50 run-pass team, they've morphed into that, right? They've moved back to a run-heavy team by league standards and by their own standards. And if Cook were to just disappear, would they pass more? That might be a net good, but it's worth considering.
I mean, that if they lost explosive plays from his running and they needed to make that up somewhere.
They'd be hoping they get them from Coleman and maybe Elijah Moore and maybe Josh Palmer. I mean, Curtis Samuel is supposed to be the speedster that also adds a explosive element to their game, and he's just never on the field.
Right.
So the point about touches,
by the way, really quickly, there are only 5 teams in the league that spend $15 million a year on their running backs. Oh, that's by cap, though. That's by cap.
Yeah.
If you go by average annual, then I guess the list does grow to like 10. Okay. So there are teams in the league that do it, but
and some teams do it on one guy.
Sure, right. Barkley, McCaffrey. I mean, the Eagles pay $27 million per year to running back, and most of that's Barkley. So it just kind of depends on what your top guy makes.
Fun fact of the Eagles, I just saw Hayden Winks tweeted this out this morning of Underdog Fantasy. The Eagles have the cheapest defense in football.
Really?
Yep.
This year?
Yep.
This year they have the cheapest defense in football.
Because what do the Eagles do? Pay their offense and draft their defense.
Yeah.
That's really they pay a couple players on their defense. They did just let Milton Williams and Josh Sweat go. Like, if they had signed those guys back, those would be big numbers. But
Here
are the Eagles paying a running back, paying the receivers, paying the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. And they are paying Barkley $20 million a year now.
Yep.
And that's a big reason why I'm sure they're not putting that into defense.
If Barkley were to miss time, here's a point I love to make about the Eagles. If you were to say one of these two is going to miss this season, Barkley or A.J. Brown, who's more important? It's probably A.J. Brown.
A.J. Brown's more important.
Even though Barkley is the best back in football, arguably.
Right, he's on the Madden cover. He's doing crazy things.
Hurts,
jumping over people.
When Hurts and Brown played together last year, they did not lose a game.
Yeah.
He's super important. You know, the way that you can dictate the game, the way that teams play coverage, whatever. But they pay Barkley, and that doesn't mean that it's exactly the right thing to do, that they should pay that, but they did it, and they won the Super Bowl. But, you know, Cook's not Barkley. Thanks for the phone call, Dan. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. I've got a Let's Get Stupid. What else do I got here for you?
I've got a Howard-esque thing I had for the first time ever yesterday.
A Howard-esque thing?
Howard-esque, you know, what was Howard? No strawberries ever? No.
He had never eaten peanut butter until he was 53.
Peanut butter.
He had never even tried peanut butter until he was...
This isn't as bad as that.
Okay.
But it's in it might be in the same tier. Maybe a tier, one tier below. One tier below that.
I was going to say...
Because it being 53 years also versus for me being 30 years is a difference.
It really is the peanut butter tier. To have not ever tried peanut butter is its own tier.
Was watermelon also on that list for him? He'd never had watermelon?
He'd never eaten any fruits. None of those, though, are as shocking as never having eaten peanut butter. Peanut butter's on the level with, like, bread.
Right, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah, I'd never tried bread before.
Right.
Really? No, it never came up. That was Howard. It never came up. Never thought about it. Anyway, peanut butter is tier one.
Yeah.
So you had something for the first time?
Yes.
Okay. I'm ready to assign it a tier.
You want to guess at what it is?
I have no idea what it is. It's going to be...
It's 20 questions. It's a drink. Oh, that's the only hint I'll give you.
A tier two, you'd never had it before?
Yeah, it's a drink.
Apple juice.
No. not apple juice. It's not a juice.
It's a like a beverage, like an adult beverage.
It's not an adult beverage.
Okay. All right, so chocolate milk.
No. Not chocolate milk.
Like a tier 2, I've never had that before.
Yeah. It will definitely be like
we're gonna be shocked that you've never drank had this before.
Shocked. Like I think you'll
iced tea.
Be surprised. Maybe you won't even believe me that I've never had it once.
Lemonade.
No. A little bit below lemonade.
You think lemonade's a tier one?
Shock factor. Yeah.
Lemonade's tier one?
Lemonade's on the same tier as peanut butter.
No, it's not.
Never trying lemonade?
Not even close.
There's a lemonade stand. I had lemonade from a lemonade stand.
It's not even close.
I don't know.
Not even close.
Not even close.
Not five tiers away.
Like lemonade, the other difference is peanut butter is never going to be offered to you. Just at a gathering.
He would make
lemonade.
He was
going to be offered to you like at any summer get together. It's going to be available right there on the table.
His son peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and had never tasted it. You're just sitting here feeding it to your son.
Okay, like, that's pretty
and good. I never thought about it.
That's pretty amazing.
So that's tier one.
Never put the finger in the peanut butter and just like let me see what this tastes like.
Not lick the
like
spoon
dog,
when you're done.
Like it's
the
dog food or something.
The butter knife when you're done. But what's a tier one drink, Josh? Owen, what is it? What's a tier one drink he's never had?
Is it like a soda that's really popular that you've never had?
Warmer.
Mm. I almost want to say like Powerade or something, but that feels wrong.
No.
Like that's
not Powerade. It's higher than that.
Like root beer?
Root beer.
That's
not tier one?
No, it's not
really?
Tier one. No.
I had root beer for the first time ever yesterday. I never had a sip of it in my life.
Pretty good, right?
That's pretty rare.
Yeah.
I feel like
sure.
Root beer. What's
I
the review? Do you like it or no?
Better than I thought it'd be.
All right.
Never appealed to me whatsoever.
Well, now you got to try root beer float.
So I have. That's what my wife mentioned to me. Like now we need to try a root beer float, which I didn't really know the concept of.
They put ice cream in root beer.
Yeah,
but
it's the other way around. The ice cream's in first, I guess, and then they pour the root beer in.
It doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter.
No.
Okay. Yeah, it seemed like it mattered.
I don't know if the process. Yeah.
Okay, so
it's like milk and cereal. You can put whatever you want in first. It's the same thing.
There is one caveat to this a little bit. I've never had root beer, but I think part of the reason I never had root beer, the real reason I never had root beer.
Is this because you thought it tasted like trees or something?
No,
he's
it's
like,
not
oh,
because
I make,
of that.
I make it out
it's
of roots.
Not roots. No, it's because you know the candy bottle caps?
Yeah.
I would have had the root beer bottle caps when I was a kid and hated that flavor, so never touch root beer because
those
of that.
Are horrible.
They're terrible.
Always give root beer such a bad name.
They're terrible. The root beer bottle caps are terrible, and it caused me to not have root beer until I was 30.
And last night you faced your demons.
I did.
What
tried
kind
it.
Of root beer was it? Because that's a big deal.
One of the famous ones.
Mug or
no.
Stewart's?
A&W.
That's a good one. I like A&W.
Yeah. I'm not prepared to rank root beers. I don't know.
I definitely am not.
Yeah, right.
I'll
two
run
sips
it solo.
In.
Let's go.
Better than I thought, though.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, root beer. Yeah, like, what is this new drink that they came that they just came out with?
You ever had Dr. Pepper?
I've had Dr. Pepper, yes.
I'm trying to think of the offshoot sodas. Like, what else is out there?
I think I've probably tried every other soda.
Okay.
I think.
Birch beer?
Yeah, there is birch beer.
I don't know what that is.
I don't know the difference between birch beer and root beer. I think of it as root beer.
Birch beer is like
pretty much the same thing. It's just I think birch beer is probably just a little better. I think it's just kind of
it's like root beer.
It's very similar.
This is not an adult beverage either.
No
birch beer.
No.
While we're on this, what's everyone's thoughts on cream soda? Fine.
I've had cream soda, and I think it's good to go back.
It's fine.
It's good.
Fine.
All right.
I don't know. It's just that's a more obscure pop. You know, like it's. Yeah. It's not that.
No, it's not
common.
One that I feel like I see walking down the aisle at the grocery store.
Are we discovering right here that we have some pops and some sodas in this room?
Josh's pop.
I'm a weirdo. I can't stop saying. I go back and forth. I never know what's going to come out of my mouth when I'm talking about it.
I say soda. I'm soda every time.
So root beer is far below the Howard peanut butter revelation.
Yes.
Far below. Okay.
Far below.
All right.
I put bread on the peanut butter tier. I've never had.
I didn't know the detail about making his son peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and still never trying
and
it. I would have assumed it was just never in the house.
He'd also never had a Reese's cup because.
Because of the peanut butter.
Because of the peanut butter. Yeah. 803-0550, our phone number. Coming up top of the hour, I'm going to get you this Let's Get Stupid about Micah Parsons because I think it's a fun little whatever. We can talk about it until he's definitely not available for trade, even if he is. Who knows? So we'll do that. 803-0550 and 1-888-552-550. When we get back, Yahoo Sports has announced the launching of Guillotine League formats, which is great for those of you that want to try that format. But there is one small problem for me and the format that I run with a couple of listener leagues and a couple of friend leagues. Whatever. It's cool. I'll tell you about it next. All right. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Quick fantasy football segment. And I mean, like, a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Are you back in our Vampire League?
I am not. I was not in last year.
Oh, you bowed out. I'm back in.
Yeah. Just if you're not the Vampire, it's just kind of another league.
Yeah, you don't actually do anything. It's kind of like a best ball league where someone gets to make moves.
Right.
I had said I wasn't going to be in it. I'm back in it. Like, fine. I just want to draft. Yahoo has announced guillotine leagues, which is huge.
Yeah.
Because the world needs to know about guillotine leagues. And if you are someone that wants to dabble, well, Yahoo, you can now run a guillotine league. I've been running guillotine through Yahoo by just manually making all of the drops for everybody on Monday nights and Tuesdays.
Uh-huh.
And that has been a little bit tedious. There's one problem, though, and that's very specific to me. I feel like I have improved on the guillotine format, the traditional format. If you don't know guillotine's fantasy football, here's how it works. Everybody drafts a team. You all play week one. The lowest scoring team, that team is cut. Your season is over. And all their players go on waivers. Everybody has $1,000. You bid on them blind auction and go on to the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Next week and the next week and the next week. So you're planning your budget. The teams are getting better and better. Great players hit the market almost every week. Like, oh, look at this. Jamar Chase is available because that team lost.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, after doing it for a couple of years, I added two wrinkles to my guillotine leagues. And that's that the week in November where there are no bye weeks, it is a double elimination, meaning the bottom two teams go. So heading into that, it's a little more intense. Every team plays. It's Thanksgiving. It's an extended week, and two teams get cut. And then the other thing I found to be better was the final should be three teams, not two.
Yeah.
I like the three-team final. And in attempting to set up my leagues on Yahoo for guillotine, it says, by the way, doing all this also allows you to have more teams in, more friends, bigger pot. So I have a 20-team league, multiple 20-team guillotine leagues. But Yahoo will not let you do that. You're kind of capped at, I think it's 18. Because
within the guillotine format.
Within the guillotine format, they won't let you do that.
Outside of it, you can still do 20.
So I have to decide if I'm going to, you know, cut down to regular and just do theirs.
Yeah.
Or continue running my own and cutting the players myself every Tuesday.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Do you know what how many they let you do in the guillotine format?
I think it's as many weeks as there are. I think there's 18 weeks. There's 18
so
teams.
So they'll let you go up to 18.
I think so. No double elimination. Okay. No three-team final. That's probably it. So do it. Get a guillotine league with your friends. Now Yahoo will do it for you. It's the best. It's the best.
It's awesome. Everyone should have one.
Yep. 803-0550. When we return, are you ready for Micah Parsons? Let's get stupid.
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay.
He's practicing still?
He's at camp. Right. He's with the Cowboys. He's just like not talking to the owner.
All right.
So, yeah. The latest on Micah Parsons. Who wants to get really stupid with a trade idea? And mainly what I'm going to do is ask you to really confront how you think about the idea of trading a lot for him. We'll get to that next.